Welcome to Comics,
episode
245.
This week, we talk about
Super.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Recording of the year 2016, or as our guest host Nick would call it, 2016.
Yeah! 2016! Yeah. Get weird!
So, would you guys say you had a good year when it came to comics and other nerdy pop culture type of things that we like to talk about on this show? Did anything stand out for you in particular that will define 2015 for you, maybe?
I went to my first con. That was exciting.
Oh, what did you go to?
I went to Fanime in San Jose.
Oh, okay.
Local, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I plan to go next May as well.
Fanime is kind of neat. I used to work there with a couple of my friends. In fact, actually, I think I'm wearing, let me check. Yeah, I'm wearing one of my Fanime shirts right now, 2006. That's hella funny. We used to work there, and then we kind of got kicked out and banned for life. But I'm sure by now we could go back. The thing is, they're kind of jerks. But if you're just attending, yeah, it's fine. It's a good con.
Yeah, it was nice as like the first one I ever went to because it wasn't super crowded and I live like 2 miles away. So it was really convenient to just like go over there. But yeah, that was the standout for me. Most like I haven't seen Star Wars yet because I'm terrible. So that would probably be number one, but that will be on the 2016 list.
Well, I won't spoil it. And more importantly, I won't give fake spoilers because, oh my God, I'm glad that we're done with that shit.
Yeah.
Seriously, I have seen so much crap on it. Like, I don't need any of this.
It was good. It was fun. I don't know why people are complaining that it's a remake of a certain movie. It's like, I mean, you liked that certain movie, didn't you? Whatever.
I think people are just looking for things to complain about.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I got inducted into the world of what's his name? TR8R just yesterday. I had never heard about it before. And so there was a whole Yahoo article about it. I was like, that's hella funny. I love the Star Wars community's ability to find these characters who are just in the background, not doing anything important. Like, if Andy was here right now, he would tell me the name of the guy who's running around carrying an ice cream maker.
That would be Wilro Hood.
That's his name. Yeah.
If you like that kind of thing, there's a podcast called Star Wars in Character, and it's all about those background characters.
Oh, yeah. Andy's told me about that in the past. Yeah. I thought you were going to say Star Wars Minute.
I'm not familiar with that podcast.
Two guys and usually a third guest, they go over all of the Star Wars movies 1 minute per episode. We're talking a full 45 minutes just talking about 1 minute. But usually they're talking about, you know, the expanded universe, their personal interactions and relationship with the thing, all that kind of stuff. And they've had really big guests, like, well, indie comic guests or other podcasting legendary type people, that sort of thing. It's a really fun thing to listen to. If you're a nerd who likes Star Wars, it's a good choice.
So, Nick, what was a defining pop culture phenomena or whatever you want to call it for you in 2015?
God, that's kind of a big question.
I'm sorry to drop that bomb on you guys.
That's fine. Well, for one, I think not to pimp our own stuff, but starting to do the Survivor podcast with Andy was pretty much the nerdiest thing I have ever said. And I don't really admit to it to too many people that I do it. I don't think I've even told my own family that I have a podcast, let alone that it's a Survivor one. In general, just like I think really discovering... Because I didn't even really listen to podcasts before 2015. Wait, that's a lie. Because John and all their stuff, they started in 2014, huh? Well, we'll call that one 18-month year, let's just say. So really discovering all of the things that you can listen to on a given day. Like, I'm checking my Overcast thing right now, and I've got 36 podcasts waiting for me when I get back to work on Monday. Just the general growth of the media.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you?
Yeah, for me, definitely Star Wars was not just the new movie, but this was kind of this year. A lot of things I did related to fandom and that kind of thing revolved around Star Wars. Like I finally went to Star Wars Celebration in April, which was a lot of fun. You know, obviously the new movie, and I finally started working on my Star Wars, like a Star Wars costume. So I'm building my Mandalorian armor.
Oh, great.
Not done with it yet. But the plan is to be done in time for Silicon Valley Comic Con in March.
Nice time.
Yeah, I'll definitely be done by then.
Without, cause Jen hasn't seen it, without spoiling anything, did it live up to your expectations, the movie?
You know, I feel like whenever I talk about this, I'm really biased because I love Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's certainly not a perfect movie, but I feel like the people who worked on it, J.J. Abrams and, you know, everybody from Disney and Lucasfilm, I feel like they delivered. The movie was, it felt like watching the original movies again for me.
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely nitpick and find things about it, but I could do that for like lots of different movies, right? Yeah. So I think that it was definitely, I feel like it lived up to the Star Wars name. It's a great addition to the set of movies. So
that's good. Now, did you take your kids to see it too? Because I'm curious, because little kids, well, there were a lot of little kids in the theater when I saw it on the 17th, even though it was a 7 o'clock showing, and they went bug nuts. They loved it.
Yeah, my kids, I haven't taken them. My son is going through a thing where he doesn't like going to movie theaters. I think it's too dark.
That's
so
fair.
He probably won't see this one in the theater. But when I saw it, you know, there were also, you know, I saw it on the 17th as well at an 8 o'clock showing, and there were a ton of kids in there. And you know, everybody in the theater went, there was like a lot of cheering and clapping and stuff, which I think is expected for that, you know, people who are going on the first day. But, son, even though he didn't see the movie, he's very excited about, just the new characters and things like that.
Groovy.
They're planning to release like a movie a year for I don't know how long. So next year, there's going to be Rogue One. And then the year after that, we'll have Episode 8. I wonder if people will start to get Star Wars fatigue. I feel like that's happening with the Marvel movies. I still enjoy the Marvel movies, but I remember after watching the second Avengers movie, I thought it was an enjoyable movie and everything, but, you know, I didn't feel like, oh man, I need to watch that again, like I did with some of the other Marvel movies, you know? And I haven't watched it since.
It's a great movie, but like, I get what you mean. Like, the enthusiasm is kind of dampened with Marvel, and hopefully it doesn't do that with Star Wars, but I also kind of feel like, with Marvel, you've got 3 Iron Man movies, you have 2 Captains America, you have 2 Avengers, you have Ant-Man, and I'm already probably forgetting some. We're on day one with Star Wars. So if they're only going to do one a year, then I think we're in for a pretty good next 6 years or so. After that, you might be right.
You know what it is, too? The Marvel movies, you can at this point, like, time out what's going to happen. Like, here's the joke, you know, and at such and such minute and second, here's going to be the action scene, and it's this long. And, you know, people are still, like, really psyched about other Marvel properties, like Jessica Jones, big hit. So,
oh, God, those were good.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, God, Daredevil's so good. That's going to be, like, my number two for 2015.
Not exactly feel-good franchises, but, God, they were so well done.
Yeah. I really liked it. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I think that the Marvel movies kind of fell into the money trap in some ways. Like, they were trying to be blockbusters and they succeeded at that. But I don't think Star Wars is going to do the same. And, you know, there's only a couple more. So it's like you said, it's not like we're going to get inundated.
I think we usually get like 3 or so Marvel movies a year, 2 or 3.
Yeah. Right?
I'll tell you, that's what made Ant-Man so good. Cause even though you're right, it does follow that general formula. It was different enough. Like, the stakes weren't really there. Like, if they lost, the world isn't going to end, right? Like, right. Ultron was trying to destroy the world. Loki was trying to destroy the world. Captain America, you had S.H.I.E.L.D. trying to rule the world, whatever. This, worst case scenario, some armies get suits. Like, and so I really like that idea of using the smaller stakes to tell a nicer story, like a more character-centric story. That's why actually Ant-Man, for all of its other kind of weird quirks, is probably my favorite Marvel movie. Hot take.
It's definitely up there for me. I really enjoyed it. And like you said, it was different enough that it set it apart.
Mm-hmm.
I think if my favorite is probably Winter Soldier, the second Captain America movie, just because it's a great, I feel like it's a really good spy movie.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The Empire Strikes Back of Marvel movies so far. But I can tell you there's a difference between something being my favorite and something being the best. Like, I know I like crap. For example, this is what we call a segue here. I think I like Super. I'm not entirely sure, but I definitely know it's not the best comic in the world, but I think I like it the more I think about it.
Thank you for that excellent segue, Nick.
You're welcome. That's what I do.
So on this
week's comic.
This is, episode 245. For this episode, we read Super, with the exclamation mark, by Justin Piatt, Everardo Orozco, Laurie Foster, and Zach Dolan.
Mm-hmm.
It is, who was the publisher for this comic? Let me see.
Unlikely Heroes Press. They're Unlikely self-published.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know, I feel kind of bad. I don't know if they've done more than the 5 issues that they have, even though they send me an email every month that I actually just opened the first one. I usually just delete them because I don't really care. When I bought the book, so I should probably tell you, the reason we're doing this episode is that 18 months ago, when I went to Comic-Con last year in 2014, a friend of mine asked me to buy this for him, the hardback version of the book. And I bought it, and as you do, I took it to the room and I read it because I had nothing else to do, and I was ambivalent. I couldn't figure out if I liked it. There's some issues with it, whatever, we'll get into all that. And so when I got home, I asked you guys online to tell me what I thought about it, and then 18 months later, here we are. So let the lesson be that if you want them to do an episode, maybe get in a little bit sooner.
So yeah, what did you guys think of this comic? Well, Nick kind of gave us an overview. So what did you think, Jen?
I liked it. I laughed out loud at a lot of the jokes. I thought it was really funny. It really appealed to my sense of humor. But I kind of feel like it was nebulous. Like, when I was filling in our notes for plot and theme, I kind of had to struggle to remember what the heck happened and why it happened and, you know, the general gist of, like, why we should care. So I think the strength of this comic is the characters and their one-liners. But I don't think for, like, the first volume it came together enough to be super memorable. If there's a second volume, I'd actually be interested in reading it because the writing is good when you read it, but I don't know if I'm going to remember this a year from now if I don't, like, keep going on it.
Mm.
What about you?
I enjoyed the experience of reading the comic. We talked about it a little bit earlier. It's definitely not objectively a great comic, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily take away from the enjoyment of something. I'd say overall, I did like it. And I agree with you, Jen. I think the strength is in the characters because the plots are not anything new or groundbreaking, but the way that superheroes are presented in this comic is an interesting take. And I think that there's something of value in taking a look at comics and superheroes, in a different way because, you know, I think a lot of people who are not necessarily regular comic readers or consumers of superhero media necessarily see anything beyond the, like, main universe, right? So, like, I think a lot of people, you know, there's nothing wrong with this. I think a lot of people, when they think of Marvel, think of the movie characters and things like that. And, you know, that's fine. That's that's kind of, you know, that idea of superheroes and, you know, these big world changing events and things like that. That's kind of the foundation for superheroes. But there are things out there like Watchmen, for example, which take a different look at superheroes. And I think there's value in looking at something familiar from a different perspective. So
a bit of a deconstruction.
Yeah,
this
definitely.
Is a bit, because the heart of deconstruction is taking a concept that you're familiar with and saying, now what if it were real? And in this case, like, what if there actually were superheroes? You would have them taking product placements and endorsements, and they would be kind of jerks to them and that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, not all superheroes are necessarily like Superman, right? You know, I think he's the go-to because he was the first superhero.
Yeah.
You know, he was raised on a farm in Kansas and had a very, I don't know if necessarily traditional is the right word, but he is a morally upstanding person.
Yeah, and he's a good guy.
Not everybody who gets superpowers is going to be like Superman. And at the same time, they're not necessarily going to be, you know, megalomaniacal, evil people out to take over the world. There's going to be people in the gray area in between them. And I think that these characters that we see in Super are definitely definitely in that gray area.
They're definitely the C-list of this world.
You know, look at the Streak, for example. He is very fast. He is naked when he's being a superhero. And he's definitely a a horn dog, right?
Yeah.
But
a bit of a perv.
He's definitely...
Definitely a bro, we'll put it that way. He's definitely... He's naked most of the series, but if he was wearing clothes, he would probably be wearing 6 popped collars, all of them salmon-colored.
But he's definitely... He definitely does heroic things, right? He is a superhero.
He saves a lot of people. That seems to be his main role within the team, which I don't know if they even made an official team name. To bring it back to Jen's point, that this is a little bit of nebulous. Like, this is, I get it because it's the first 5 issues, they're just doing world building. But they didn't even build it out to the point where they have a name yet. But his role is there. His role is, I'm going to run in. I'm going to find the bystander. I'm going to pull them out of danger. Because anytime he tries to fight, it sure as hell doesn't work for him. Which is always weird. I've always thought that about speedsters. I mean, one supersonic punch would pretty much drop anyone to the ground. And yet, for some reason, none of them ever think about that.
I mean, speedsters can't work, right? So
yeah.
Yeah,
they
I
would
think
be
part of the
broken.
Yeah. Well, if you start treating them like you should, like your whole universe goes out of whack. So it's hard to write a speedster.
Yeah.
So I think it works well to just kind of go with the goofy tack on them because, I mean, it's a play on the Flash, and the Flash is kind of campy goofy. And then when you add like a sense of indecency to that, like you get the Streak. And I like him. I thought he was a fun character.
Yeah, it's interesting. At first I wasn't a great big fan of him. I thought, oh, okay, he's whatever. He's the resident horn dog. Okay, great. But then in the 5th issue, in the final one of this volume, that's when I started to like him because, you know, it was him at the start of the episode. Good God, you'd think I'd be able to figure that out by now. At the start of the issue, he's hanging out with his dad just at the old folks retirement home, which I don't know I'm sure you guys caught it. It's called the Golden Age Retirement Home, but I'm bumped.
Yeah,
he's hanging out with his dad and just doing some stuff. And so you actually get to see things from his point of view for a bit instead of just, hey, I'm going to give this witty one-liner and then whip off all my clothes. So it was kind of cool that once you get into his shoes, you can, I started to appreciate him more.
Yeah. And I think, the characters that they actually took time to deal with, I liked the best. But then again, there's also Blood Death, who was my favorite and they did nothing on it. But you know, there's sometimes when like it's better to not have a background and just have absurdity. But like, Blitz and Black Adam, I actually really liked that they took the time to go into their relationship because it made them interesting. And I think that when you do like the alternate take on superheroes, it's often the villains are just kind of like goofy and one dimensional, but it was actually really neat that we got to see Black Adam be a villain, but it's also super clear that he really cares about his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like how worried he was when he thought that she was trapped in the chaos, when that blob thing attacked the city. And it's, you know, like he's genuinely worried. He's not like secretly evil about her.
Yeah, he. Oh yeah, no, I was gonna say you're correct. He chewed out Tower for Tower yells at him about, oh, how dare you take a phone call when we're having a meeting. He says, look, the last time I didn't take a phone call, someone I care about almost died. So it's genuinely Paul. What's her name? Paula?
Yeah. Paula.
Thank you. He feels that Paula is more important to him than this group, or at least important enough that he's going to stop an important meeting in the meantime, which is a nice little touch in this comic.
Yeah, and it's neat because he actually treats it like a job. You know, like he pretends to go to work, but then he's actually going to his supervillain lair, and he seems to treat them like coworkers. Like he works with them, but he obviously values his significant other way more. So I thought they actually did a really good job for having so little time spent on developing him.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled it off well doing it in like that short amount of time. Because most of the time we see him, he's just like, he's not fighting so much as getting his ass beat.
Or telling people. That was the interesting thing that I think backs up your assertion of him as just like, it's just a job. Villainy is a job for him. Is that whenever they get into a gig and they start robbing, for instance, I think in the first issue, I finally did it in the first issue. Good job, Nick. They rob that casino, and he's telling people, look, it's not worth your life. Just let us in. We're going to take the money. Insurance will cover it and we're gone. There's another one later on. Oh yeah. Towards the end, when they're robbing a place that they think has a whole bunch of people, but it turns out to be empty. His entrance is announcing to the security guards that $5.95 an hour isn't worth your life. Just let us steal this money and we're going to be gone. Like, it is very much, I don't want to say a moral thing, but he sees it as like, I don't need to hurt people, so why would I bother? They're out there just like I am, doing a job. It's just that mine pays better.
He seems like the most even-keeled of the group, right? You see him kind of be the mitigator, whereas everyone else is trying to just get it done without scruples. But he's like, hey, insurance will cover this. And it's actually really funny that the universe has the heist set up. Because they're insured against supervillains, but they're not insured against hero-related accidents, right? So
it seems like a grave oversight. Like, I know for a fact I could go down to my local, I don't know, AAA or Foster's or whatever. Wait, Foster's? No, that's a restaurant, Foster Freeze. Well, whoever sells insurance, I could go down there and say, here, look, here's $100 a month. If Godzilla attacks San Jose, I want $1 million. And they'd be like, sure, we'll do that right now. And that's the real world, because ultimately that would just be $1,200 a year for them that they never have to pay out against. But it seems like in a world where there actually are superheroes, you would probably be able to get superhero damage insurance.
You'd think so, but apparently it's only for supervillains.
It's a good plot point. And hey, you know what? It led to a funny interaction at the end. So there you go. And ultimately, I think everything in this comic boils down to rule of funny or rule of cool. And that was funny.
That is actually a really good way to summarize it. Rule of funny or rule of cool. Because I think that's this comic's strength and its problem.
No, I agree with you. Actually, on the, like, the rule of funny thing works very well when done well. Like, I don't know if either of you guys read The Tick. Did you ever read The Tick?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We did it for the podcast, too. Yeah.
Oh, I will read that. Or read it. I will listen to that. No, but like, The Tick works really, really well because it is a parody of comics and it came out at a time when there weren't very many parodies of comics. The problem is now, you know, this was, I think, 2013, 2014 when it was produced. We have a lot of parodies of comics, and so to the point where parody has become its own thing that is ripe for parody, and this kind of falls into that trap of, what was I trying? Oh, I'm sorry, I had a brain fart. what I was trying to say is that there's a difference really between making something and referencing something. And this does a lot of good references, but it doesn't actually create that much that's new. And that was, like, the last couple of days as I've been reading this, trying to remember, okay, what was my original qualm about this? I think that's the root of the matter, the crux, is that it doesn't actually really create a whole lot of stuff. It just references a lot. Like, the one I always go back to is when that big blob thing is attacking the city. There's a guy who spouts that line from Troll 2. He's eating her. Oh, God, he's eating me. Oh, my God. I did that very badly. I don't care. give me two more beers, and I'll be able to do it better. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's a one-liner. It's thrown in there, but it doesn't really add anything to the plot. It's just like saying, hey guys, we're in on the joke. We know it happens. And that can kind of get distracting sometimes when it comes to humor. Like, if you look, remember we did Ecstatics together as a fun family jaunt, and that was humor, but it was all original creation stuff. So it felt really good to me. This, it just felt kind of like checking a box off on a list saying, yep, we saw this show. We watched this internet video, we watch these things. So even though I laughed at them, after a while I was kind of like, all right, now what?
Yeah, I actually think that's really true, because I chuckled a bit when they made the references, but I think this comic really shines in the humor that the writer created. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a line here that Blood Death says, and I looked it up. He's not hunting a criminal. He is fighting Black Adam. He goes on his little rant and says, justice is the vengeful cat that wrecks up your couch and shits in your shoes, and no one can run in shitty shoes. The first time I read that, I almost squirted coffee out my nose. Like, that line probably shaved 2 years off of my life in a good way. And, like, obviously, this writer can write really funny. I mean, maybe that's not to everyone's humor, but I liked it.
Oh, it was great.
I think, like, a lot of the stuff in here that was written originally and is in no way a reference to other humor was just done really well. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is there are so many references, and it seems almost like, you know, they're trying to fill in a lot of humor, but the original stuff really stands on its own superbly. Mm-hmm. So the references seem unnecessary in contrast to that.
There's a real great example of that in the second issue. Yeah, the second issue, where they go to the science fair. And every single panel has scientists of some sort or another from some other show or movie or comic just sitting in the background. And it's, yeah, on the one hand, I like that because it was kind of neat. Like, oh, hey, look, there's Dr. Forrester. There's Crow T Robot, and you can see Gypsy. And there are the Ghostbusters, and there's this, that, the other thing. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, all right, yeah, we get it. Like, doing that one or two frames is really cool, but they literally did it for 3 or 4 pages. Like the entire plot, it's like, I'm going to find another doctor. I'm going to put Dr. Robotnik in this frame, and I'm going to put one in this frame. It's kind of like, all right, we get it. You're very good at mining pop culture for stuff to work with. And that's cool, but you got to have another shtick. And you're right, Jen, this guy, whoever did the writing, I know Zach Dolan did the art. I'm looking at these names here. So either Justin Piot, Everardo Orozco, or Laurie Foster, whichever you does the writing, you're very good when you're doing your original writing. When you're just kind of referencing things, it's, I don't know, it falls a little bit flat, in my opinion, at least.
It looks like the writing team is Zach Dolan and Justin Piot.
Oh, he does the writing too? Oh.
Yeah.
Apparently. Who does the art then? Is that also Zach Dolan?
Yep. He does the pencils.
Okay.
Laurie Foster's inks, and Everardo Orozco is colors.
Okay. And, you know, not to, we'll talk about art later. Never mind. Cause I really like the art, but we'll stick with, whatever you guys do, because I don't know what's going on.
It's really kind of a stream of consciousness podcast.
Yeah. Okay. It's well, a free for all.
In that case, then, since we were talking about the art and ink and penciling, the art is one of the biggest strong suits in this, mm-hmm, to me. Like, that was the reason I kept reading, many, many months ago in my hotel room, was when people are fighting, their costumes bunch up and there's shading and there's a lot of focus on, what's the opposite of shading? Highlighting. There you go. There's a lot of focus on small little details like that, and the inks are always really clean, and it's just, it's such a visibly nice thing to look at.
I think the art in comics often helps dictate the atmosphere, and this, the clean, the cleanliness and the, like you said, the attention to details lend themselves to the humor of the comic. You know, it's, the art's not, the art pairs well with the writing, is I guess what I'm trying to say. It doesn't distract or contradict what we're reading. So that's appreciative. I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Yeah. You're right. I never thought of that before. But since it's such a heightened world, right? Like, well, I'll say it. It's kind of a cartoony world. So the art is a little bit cartoony in that it's clean and bright and whatever. But that's also a thing that I like because a lot of times, especially in movies and video games that I see, you know, they go for, we're going to go for grim, gritty, dark, whatever, that kind of thing. But I don't know, go outside tomorrow if it's not 20 degrees. And it's actually really bright and shiny out there in the real world. And so I enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think the character design from a visual standpoint is excellent, you know. I really like the Furious Fire Ant's costume. I wasn't really sure what his, like, superhero theme or, well, not theme, but, like, his, he doesn't have superpowers. He's, like, a gadget guy, I think.
Apparently he has the strength of ants, but, yeah, I don't know if that's just a thing that he says or not, because he doesn't seem to be able to hold those really heavy walls the way, I see. And unfortunately, I don't know the names of some of these other background characters, like the Diamond Lady that we see from time to time. She's able to hold walls up really well, whereas Furious Fire Ant seems to be just kind of like, I'll do what I can.
Yeah, you know, I thought his costume was really well designed, or Blood Death, his costume is pretty cool. He's kind of a mashup of the different, like, that style character, right? He's kind of got the Judge Dredd shoulder pad and the you know, the comedian kind of weapons package and that kind of stuff.
The way I was telling him to a friend of mine is just imagine a character named Blood Death, and that's him. Like, I mean, it's perfectly designed. Like, he is every 90s Image comic character, specifically the Rob Liefeld ones.
Yeah.
And the bullet holes. I love the bullet holes.
Yeah.
Like, why are they there? Why is he bleeding? Why is no one tended to that?
I enjoyed him. He reminded me so much of a Tick character, and I can't remember the name of the character all of a sudden, but on the Tick, he was obviously a parody of the Punisher, but he was the one who kept saying, like, put it in the happy box.
Oh, I recall, I know, I remember that character as well. Yeah. I can't think of what his name is. I think his name was, like, Barry or something. Did they call him Barry?
No, Barry was the evil Tick.
Oh, Barry was the other Tick. I'm going to have to look that up later.
Yeah, I've got my book somewhere over there. I'll look it up. But yeah, no, like, he had a really, the one that I really enjoyed looking at visually, other than Blitz, because she reminded me very much of Booster Gold, but was Silhouette. Like, I really like the design of that character. There's a Marvel Underworld character who looks similar, but in a dopey kind of way. This one looked good, what with the color scheme and the Ankh motif and all that kind of stuff. And I wish they had gone more into her background. But again, with only 5 issues and with as many characters, I guess you can't really do that too much.
Yeah, I thought she was cool as well.
Yeah. I love that it turned out to be a lady, because I was just imagining this grizzled old man under there. And it's like, nope, it's a cop. A lady cop.
That was she's so a badass awesome. Cop, too.
Yeah, I love it.
A chair bashing cop.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that there's, like, the Doctor Strange type of guy in the old folks home who recognizes the Ankh. That was nice. That's one of the little details that I appreciate about this comic.
It feels like an actual lived-in world. Like, I know there's been a lot of stuff where, hey, what if superheroes were real, and what if they were common? There's been a lot of that, but this feels genuine. Like, it's a world where, yeah, all right. Like, even the villains, when they retire, they go to the same retirement home. Like, I'm not going to call him Cobra Commander because that would get somebody sued. But the Hooded Snake guy, whatever his name
is. I think he is called like the Hooded Snake.
Yeah.
The Hooded Cobra.
That's his name, yeah. But like, that's the thing is he's this 70-year-old man. And he's just like, well, all right, I can't really do villainy anymore. I'm going to go retire in the same place as all these people that I was not really friends with, obviously, because we fought each other, but we have that bond in common. And in fact, that is what Crimson Comet, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yay, I finally remembered a name of a character who isn't a main character. That was Crimson Comet's shtick. His arch nemesis from back in the day gets lost in time and space, comes back to today, and in the end, he doesn't fight him. He just tells him, look, we're all old now. Time moved on. I mean, what are you going to do? The Soviet Union isn't even around anymore.
Man, I really liked the ending of that where Crimson Comet just talks him down. He's like, hey, why don't you go to Russia? And the guy's like, sure.
Yeah.
I didn't actually expect that to happen, and I enjoyed that it did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I've said the last couple times I've been on, fights are generally my least favorite parts of comics. And so I like anything where the resolution isn't just, all right, we fight now, I guess. Punch, punch, punch. I win. I like it where it's like, okay, let's actually get down to the root of what's causing this. And it's the fact that this guy just spent 30 years in a weird sort of time limbo, and now he doesn't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah, punching him out probably wouldn't be the best way to resolve that.
Yeah. Well, not to mention that a whole bunch of people tried it and failed.
Yeah. I want to just take a moment and interject how wonderfully done the Hooded Cobra was, because he keeps popping up, right? Even though he's not in any way a main character. Like, they built a mythos around him. Like, he claimed to have stolen the pyramids. And you get that little scene where he's like, of course I put them back. It's the principal. And then, like, you know, we see his rivalry with the Crimson Comet. And then he helps resolve the issue with the Soviet robot guy, because he's like, yeah, I'm over it. I don't know. There's just something so clever, I think, about taking a side character who has no effect whatsoever on the actual plot and just interjecting him in there as a running gag. I don't know. I really like that. Like, I'm thinking about it now. And even though he's not a main character, he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he had good design and he was implemented well.
Yeah. It just, it's like you said, it makes the universe feel lived in because they keep referencing these older heroes and then they actually show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something a lot of comics would benefit from and don't do as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think my favorite, like, recurring background thing, I mean, he's only in issue 4, I think, is Sir Nicholas, the...
Oh, yeah.
The you know, the secret agent guy with the eye patch pops out of boxes. But I think my favorite, you know, we were talking a little bit about references to pop culture, but I really appreciated that when he popped out of the boxes, people around him had the red Metal Gear Solid style exclamation mark over their head. That was one of the things that made me laugh out loud.
And that's a great reference because it's one panel and that's it. It's not belabored.
But I thought he was like a great kind of mashup of different secret agent spy guys, because he's like, you know, his name's Sir Nicholas, so he's kind of a Nick Fury, but he's British, so he's kind of a James Bond.
Well, also his full name is Nicholas Moore Dalton, and two of those names are James Bond types, and he himself, I mean, if you didn't read him as Sean Connery, then
there's definitely
exactly.
He spoke in Sean Connery's voice in my head.
Yes.
You know, the whole, I think probably my favorite single issue is issue 4, the old folks home. Cause like I'm flipping through the pages and there's lots of great stuff in the background. Mm-hmm. Like there's this giant, like he kind of looks like a rock person or maybe like Clayface style character.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But he's got a walker. He's giant, but he has a walker, you know, because he's in an old folks home. Or like the night nurse and the different, like, I didn't realize at first that those blue guys were the orderlies.
Yeah.
I thought they were like other old folks, like other residents.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, the whole setting and the different characters living in the old folks' home was great.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that world, being a construction, working in the construction field would be very lucrative, because every single issue, some building or another gets smashed to smithereens. Like, even in issue number 4, where it's basically, let's just talk the villain to death in an old folks' home, there is a smash in, and you've got to repair half that building. Actually, yeah, now that I think about it, the entire building gets leveled, doesn't it? And the final scene is Crimson Comet sitting on his chair amidst a throne of rubble, having a nap.
He just goes back to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's charming.
In fact, come to think of it, I'd have to check again. It's on my iPad. My iPad's all the way on the other side of the room, so that's not going to happen. But I think, from memory, he's even sitting in that Conan the Barbarian kind of pose. It's just so happens that he's asleep.
Taking a look at it now. Yes. Yeah. He's sleeping in that pose.
That was clever. See, again, that's a good reference. Because also, having him sit in the Conan the Destroyer, Conan the Barbarian, whatever his official name is, I know both of those are movies, having him sit in the Conan pose is a reference, but it's also a good characterization thing. Like, this was the most powerful superhero of his day, so-called by his teammates or whatever. And so if he's the most powerful, he's capable of such huge feats. And so he isn't just some doddering old grandpa. There is actually a threat. Well, I don't want to say a threat, but you know what I mean. Like he's a powerful individual, much like Conan. And so having him sit in that pose, that's a very good reference and a very good character moment.
Yeah, that's...
Definitely.
I didn't even think about that. It's really true.
Yay! Look at that. I can make points. Yeah!
Yeah!
I could talk about more than just the Wu-Tang Clan. You know, the one, so, we hit most of the characters. The ones we haven't really talked about, we haven't talked about, Mike, aka the Unquenchable Lush, who is very much a Hulk reference, Hulk cloth, or Max, who looks like, he actually, to me, he looked a lot like Doctor Strange, but he's more of the, Dr. Fantastic. What's his name?
Mr. Fantastic.
Thank you. Oh my God. Wow.
He is a doctor though.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. That's, he should be Professor Impossible. Wait, nope. That's a different property, but you get my point. It's like, he's that type of character. And he has that big old robot Action Man Zero.
Yes. Action Man Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I didn't realize until I reread it a second time was that Max didn't build Action Man Zero. He seems to have found him. And that's a plot point that's kind of just left hanging. But hopefully if there is a second volume or at least further issues, they'll go into that. Because that could be pretty interesting.
I seem to remember some line where they mentioned that he is from Japan. Like, Action Man Zero is a Japanese. He was built in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I don't know much any of his... I don't think there's much else about his background.
Yeah. Like, because I was wondering if what kind of robot he is, essentially. You know what I mean? Is he like the Gigantor type, where you have Max sitting in his little plane thing, controlling him, telling him what to do? Or is he actually sentient? He seems to be some sort of sentient, but I'm just not sure. Again, that's a thing that could be explored later on. Hopefully they did.
He definitely seemed to have self-awareness. He wasn't just controlled.
Mm. Yeah, I've always been interested in, I don't want to say interested in robot rights, but you know what I mean? Like, I whenever you have a world that has robots, I'm very keen on knowing what the rules are, because if you treat them well, it'll all be fine. They're going to do work, they're going to build cars for us in factories the way they do in the real world. If you don't treat them right, they're going to rebel and become our masters. And so I want to know what kind of world we're living in.
If you're interested in that, you should read Alex and Ada.
Yes.
Oh, people have been telling me about that one. I didn't know that was a robot thing. Really?
Should listen to
our
episodes on it.
Yeah.
Oh. It's really good.
Okay. Because maybe I'm thinking of a different one, but I thought that was just like a standard romantic comedy story. I mean, kind of funny.
It is a romantic. There is romance, but it is about AI and robot rights.
See, Nobody ever tells me that kind of thing. They just go, oh, you should like this. It's good. No, I need to know why. Sell me on it. Okay, I'll give that a shot at some point. Because I know many of my friends have watched it. God damn it. I cannot get it right. Many of my friends have read that one and been big fans.
It's really well done, but,
yeah.
If you're interested in that, I think you will find it an interesting comic.
Groovy. Will do.
Complete tangent, regarding robots in Super. Did you guys catch the line where Max was like, completely ignore the half built sex bots harnessed to the wall in the shelter? Was that a reference to Ex Machina?
I know that's a movie. Was that based on a book or something?
I don't know, but the movie, the guy is like a genius and he's in a bunker and he builds sex bots.
Yeah.
And he's trying to make real AI.
I think Ex Machina came out after this.
Okay. Well, the movie definitely did, but if it's based on a book, I'm going to say 2007 anime film on the sequel to 2004's Appleseed. Boo. Yeah, I don't know. Doesn't say anything. That's interesting. Because I read that part a long time ago and didn't notice it. Well, obviously I noticed the joke, the very bro-y joke, but I didn't notice, I didn't catch it as a reference to anything. And I still haven't seen it. I still haven't seen the movie, so I don't know.
Yeah, I need to watch that movie as well. It's on my lists on Amazon.
It was good. I liked it. It was weird. It was weird as fuck.
Yeah, a lot of people have been telling me it was cool.
It has two. It stars two actors from Star Wars: Force Awakens.
Oscar Isaacs. Really? Who's the other one?
Domhnall Gleeson, who plays General Hux in Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Oh. I know. I will watch anything with Oscar Isaac in it. He's really good. And rapidly becoming one of my favorite actors. So I will probably be watching that maybe tomorrow if it's on. We'll see. But it looks like it's original, which would mean that maybe, just maybe, although probably not, they ripped it off from this. That's exactly. Oh my god. Oh man, if we get sued by Sony, wait, Sony? Yeah, I'm going to say Sony. If we get sued by Sony, we will know why. They're trying to suppress the truth. Oh, Universal, who cares?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Really.
But that joke, to bring it back a little bit, was something that I said earlier where this comic has a lot of really good stuff to it, but it's very bro-y. Like, a lot of the humor is kind of like college frat guy stuff, which isn't entirely my thing. And usually when it's a little bit, I can just go, all right, whatever, that happened, and just move on. But there were a couple things in here that I was just kind of like, all right, roll my eyes at, and then move along. And that was one of them. I was just kind of like, all right, yeah, he builds sex bots. Great. That's a funny joke.
Yeah, it definitely was a lot of bro humor. But that's kind of the thing. Like, I don't know who I would recommend this comic to, because I know that it won't elicit laughs from everyone I know. But on the other hand, I would say if like lowbrow humor is your thing and referential humor, then this is a comic for you.
Yeah.
And it is really good at the lowbrow humor. Yeah. I thought it was quite funny.
Yeah. Well, like you're right. And I think, ultimately, the way that you would sum this one up is to say this is a good comic, but there's a lot of better stuff out there. Like, that's the only reason I would say I don't know who I would recommend it to, because if somebody said, hey, Nick, what's funny and good? I would say, like, oh, okay, well, you got Rat Queens, you got X-Statics, you got all this other stuff. You've got, or if someone said, hey, what's just really good and well done? I'd say, like, okay, you got Southern Bastards, you got this, that, the other thing. Super, while it's good and I enjoyed it, I don't know if it would be near the top of any of the lists of things that I would recommend to folks. And so ultimately, I think that's where I fall on it, where it's like, I enjoyed it. I would give this like a solid B-, you know what I mean? That sort of thing. And it's like, it's good, but there's a dozen things that I would recommend to people ahead of it. But if someone just said, I need something completely new and different, or, you know, I've read this grim, dark stuff so many times, I need something that's not that, I'd be like, this is a good change of pace. Or if somebody just really likes good art.
That's fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like we're wrapping up the discussion a bit. So do you guys want to move on to rating this?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Cool. Just you guys do the rates first, because I forget how that goes. And I'm just going to follow your lead.
Oh, we just give it – we give it like a one – we do a one a 0 to 5 rating. And so a solidly average comic would be a 2.5.
Okay.
So, Jen, how about you go first?
Sure. I'm going to give this one, I'm a bit torn, but I'll say a 3. And I'm torn toward a 3.5. Because I did find it really funny. Hmm. I enjoyed reading it. It suited my sense of humor. There were some jokes in there that genuinely made me laugh out loud, and I really appreciated that. There were also a couple things that it did really well, like, you know, Blitz, the art for her in hero form and as just Paula was really good in that mm-hmm. they were different people, and that makes sense to me because, you know, your significant other would recognize you otherwise, and it just drives me nuts in comics when costumes don't do that, and then people pretend they don't recognize who people are. So that was it, like the little details in the art like that are really nice. Or like we talked about earlier with the old hero in his Conan pose in the recliner. I think just like little details. I thought the characters were interesting. I want to hear more about them. And if I can get my hands on more issues of this or a second volume, I will read it now to keep the momentum going. But I think the major downfall of this comic is that when you put together a trade, I think you need to be extremely judicious about what you include. And I don't think this was long enough to be a trade. Like, okay, so it's 170 pages, which is like lengthwise fine, but content-wise, it didn't feel like it built enough for me to have something to hold on to if I'm going to wait however many months for the next trade. And I tend not to buy issue to issue. I think someone who would be okay with this because, you know, you're kind of getting your fix and it slowly develops. But when you expect major chunks of plot at a time, this one, it leaves you hanging. And that's my main complaint here. I think that the trade was not judiciously put together in a way that would keep people reading. Maybe an extra issue or two would have done the trick. Not having read them, I couldn't say, but that would be my assumption. So yeah, 3.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I would go 3, and I'm also a little bit torn to give it a 3.5, but for a slightly different reason. Like, I give it a 3 from basically the same reason you said, you know, it leaves you hanging a little bit. The reason I'm tempted to give it a 3.5 is that in hindsight, the way that it ended with, you know, Paula staring pretty much directly at the camera and saying, "My boyfriend is a superhero." Like that little joke at the end, I felt like, you know what? That's a good natural ending point. And then I can just say, "Oh, okay." You know what I mean? Like, I can kind of imagine, it's, how do I put it? It'd be the end of a good movie, like, there you go, and then you're done. You don't need the sequel, I feel. You can just go, oh, okay, and then the world got weird. So I kind of feel like that's, but that's also a little bit of a weakness in that, if I think of it that way, like, that might be why I never bothered to look and see if there even was an issue 6, 7, 8. Like, because I'm like, meh, okay, I read it, it was pretty good, I was entertained, and it seemed like a natural resting point, so maybe I'm just done. So yeah, I would say 3, maybe a 3.5. I'll be generous. I'm the nice person. I will go 3.5.
All right. I'm going to also give it a 3. You know, I definitely enjoyed this, and I'd say it's better than, it's definitely above average, because it does do some interesting things, looking at superheroes, from a different way, in a different way, and trying to, you know, these people definitely just, there's, well, like Blitz specifically, she has a pretty normal life outside of being a superhero. I think we don't see that. You know, I think a lot of times we just get glimpses of it in superhero comics, but we don't spend a lot of time seeing how being a superhero impacts their day to day. And I think it's clearly hard to be a waitress and be a superhero. It's there in other ways. It doesn't do anything amazing, but it's definitely a great comic. And the art is, we talked about it a little bit, but the art is really, really well done. So that's a big plus working for this comic, in this comic's favor. So, you know, 3 is a good score. I, you know, like you guys, I wouldn't necessarily recommend this to everybody. But I think people who are already fans of superhero comics would enjoy this. And people who appreciate this kind of, you know, the nods to pop culture would probably enjoy this as well. So Definitely three.
A solid 3 out of 5.
Yes.
Nice.
Well done,
across the board. Very average job. I'm trying to think of one of the, wait, scroll up. Very average job, Zach Dolan. And you know what? That's the thing. People get on the case of, oh, it's not the best. You know what? No, average is fine. Look at JAG. That show was on for like 10 years. It wasn't the best show. It was just, it was a show that people watched. And it's fine. People, we need that too. There is plenty of room for two broke girls on your plate.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, there are some shows that I was aware of their existence, but it never occurred to me how long these shows ran. Like, my wife recently had been watching Charmed on Netflix.
Yeah, that show
went on for a long time. Mm-hmm.
There's been a Law and Order of some stripe or another on TV for the last 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It's fascinating. I mean, it's all different shows, like SVU, Law and Order something else, and Law and Order something other. I mean, there's been different ones and different casts, but yeah, it's been around forever and ever and ever.
I think it's very interesting that one of them has Ice-T as playing a police officer.
Oh, yeah.
Especially since he's the guy who wrote the song Fuck the Police. Anyway.
Well, that's Ice Cube.
Was that Ice Cube? I thought Ice-T had a... Maybe he did Cop Killer.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember. Oh, actually, wow, I was wrong. So the date, I was underballing it. Law and Order has been on since September 13th, 1990.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
25 years this franchise has been around. So, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is you need those average shows. Yeah, everyone gets on the, like, don't get me wrong, I love really good stuff, too. But at the end of the day, if I need something to watch, I'll just turn on USA, and sure enough, they're going to have something that's enjoyable and very middle-of-the-road mediocre. And, okay, maybe that's not the most ringing endorsement of Super with an exclamation point, but I can think of a lot worse. I could say, for example, it's Nine Rings of Wu-Tang.
No, it's fair. I mean, Super was entertaining. Mm-hmm. I think that was it. I'm guessing that's what the authors intended, and that's what it did. So that's a good thing. At least, I was entertained.
Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what you want, right? I mean, that's why we read these things. Yeah, all right. Granted, there's very good culture out there with deeper meanings and it moves you and all that kind of stuff. And that's good. That's valuable. We need that. But also, you know, there's a reason that we make popcorn. I had popcorn for dinner tonight because I just didn't feel like making an actual meal.
And me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Cereal and popcorn, they are all the time treats. But that's the thing. It's like, there is space for that. And there's value in that. And so if you're listening to this and you read that or read this and you're like, I enjoyed it, I don't know what they're talking about saying it's not good, then good for you. You should be like that. Enjoy all the things in this world.
And just remember, it's not Spawn.
Hey man, Spawn changed my life. I don't know how, because I've never read it and I'm not going to. Spawn made me who I am today.
All right, everybody. So, you know, that's our take on Super with an exclamation mark. So now we're going to move into our weekly trivia. For this round, we're going to do quotes.
Quotes.
As you may remember from previous editions of Quotes, each one of the hosts is going to choose a quote from the comic that we read for this week and present that quote to another one of the hosts so the person will try to guess the character who said it and the context of the quote. You get 1 point for guessing the character, 1 for guessing the context, and if you get both, you get a third point. And trivia is brought to you by Patreon. So if you like trivia and the things we're doing, visit our Patreon page and give us money.
Yes.
I'm not as good as this. Money. I'm not as good at doing this as Andy is. I'll be more prepared next time.
Andy is the one who makes it sound like we're not just begging in the street.
Please, no sir. Offense, David, but we're going to starve if you don't give us money.
Please, well, some more.
You know, it's not, you know, if you do enjoy this comic, or excuse me, this podcast that we do, and you feel like it's worth some money.
Yeah, why not? And you know what?
Kick us some money. And, you know, we would, as we have done in the past, we have sent fun little surprises out to our supporters. So, you know, if you support us, you might get a thing in the mail. Yeah. And it will be related to comics, not just any old thing.
And you know what? If you hate me, if you think I'm a blowhard who talks too close to his mic, just know this. I don't get any of that. It's fine. I'm going to go to bed. And I'm going to go to sleep. I won't see a dime of your money. It's only going to go to Jen, Andy, with his baby. You don't want that baby to starve. And David, who has two kids, right? You got two? He's got two mouths to feed. So
the money from Patreon, in fact, does not, in fact, go to for my children.
It keeps them in clothes and food. If not for this, they would be selling matchsticks on the side of the road. It's still technically Christmas. Okay, I don't know when this is actually going to go up, but we're somewhat in the Christmas season as of this recording. It's cold out there. You want them to have shoes, and it's on your conscience if you don't. Patreon.com/welcome to comics.
Thank you, Nick.
You're welcome.
All right.
For all your welcome to comics needs.
All right, so let's get to quotes. So we'll start with Nick. You will be giving a quote to Jen.
Okay. So I found it here. It is I will act it out for you too. In your fucking face, Quark.
Okay, I am really bad at quotes. I think I lost horribly last time too. Like, as in, I think I had -10 points at the end. Like, I'm not even kidding. Clearly this is Rom to Quark in the bar on DS9.
Correct. It is not that one.
Okay. I feel like it's either during the science award thing or in the old folks home. I'm going to go Max to, cool, while he's accepting his award to the fat guy in the wheelchair.
Yes. What? Yes, really? with the candlestick in the library, you're correct.
Holy shit. That was a shot in the dark.
On all accounts. Yeah, yeah. So he had just finished giving this big long speech about how science is noble and great and winning awards isn't the point, blah, 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 blah. And then he passes by Quark and just shouts in his face.
Well done, Jen. Three points for Jen.
That's awesome.
You're on the board.
I'll still end this with -10, just you see.
All right. Well done, Jen. Now you are going to give a quote to me.
Okay. Here it is. Well, that problem solved itself. It's almost like it would have been better if we never helped at all.
Oh, man. I killed it on the last round of quotes, and this time it's been like a week since I read this, so I think I won't get this one at all.
I just can't remember who said it, but sorry, go on. I don't mean to stall you.
I think the situation is, I'm pretty sure it's after the unnamed super team tried to help some situation, and then the real super team came. I'm going to go with it's the, after they stopped the casino heist, and I'm going to say it was Max.
Final answer?
Yeah, final answer.
It was Fire Ant after they talked down the cosmonaut.
Damn. All right, so David gets 0 points.
Sorry. I couldn't remember if it was Fire Ant or Streak, but I remembered the situation.
All right. Poor job, David. Read better next time. All right. So, and the final quote will be from me to Nick.
I'll be playing on behalf of Andy, so I'm going to tank this.
All right.
On purpose.
Good. Okay.
Andy deserves it. for not very being good. Here.
And it was Elsa Bloodstone in issue 4 of Next Wave, right?
I wish. I love Next Wave.
No, I'll give it the honest try.
All right, so the quote is, I think I would like to go home.
Oh. Okay, I promise I'm not actually trying to tank. I genuinely don't remember that being said. I think I would like to go home. I feel like, I'm going to do my best here. I feel like that's something a villain said after getting the pulp beaten out of them. So I'm going to say that Gorilla was, Kongorilla is the real name. The big monkey guy that gets beaten up by Paragon is from a book. I don't even remember. Superstar, that's his name. So the monkey that gets beaten by Superstar when Blitz is just sitting in the crowd as a regular, normal human being, whatever, not in her secret identity, watching this go down.
Is that your final answer?
That is wrong on all three accounts, isn't it?
It is.
Okay.
But you were right. It was a villain. It was, in fact, the Russian Rocket.
Ah, you're
after the, after he's beaten or talked down.
Yeah.
And the Russian KGB lady talks about that his homeland needs him.
Yeah, the Rodina still needs him. Yeah, that's right. It's when he makes the decision for himself instead of just following orders.
Right.
So good job, Andy. 0 points.
All right. So that was quotes, and that wraps up this episode. Thank you for joining us, Nick.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
I think the plan is to have you back next week, where we will be reading Marvel Apes, The Evolution Starts Here.
Oh, that's right. I suggested that.
Yes. All the comics we'll be reading during your tenure with us, Nick, will be suggestions you made. So following Marvel Apes, we're going to read Southern Bastards, which I'm looking forward to. I've heard it's really good.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it's about, but I look forward to it. So like I said, thank you for joining us, Nick. If listeners are curious and want to find out more about Nick, is there any like website or is there anything you would like to,
I'm on Twitter. I'm at We Have Snacks. I think some of you guys follow that. I've got that Survivor podcast but Andy probably mentioned that once or twice. Outwit, Outplay, Outcast. But who cares? other than that,
well, it's starting up again soon, right?
February. We just finished Survivor Cambodia a couple weeks ago, and there's a couple weeks off before they start the next season. So we'll be. The week before the show debuts, we will record our first episode, and we will be doing that live. So, yay!
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, listeners, as always, you can find out more about upcoming episodes or find past episodes at welcometocomics.com. You can email us at welcometocomics@gmail.com. And you can always find us on the Twitters or on Facebook. So thanks for listening, and you will hear our voices again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Have fun.